was my pleasure to speak again here, and this is not the first time, and I hope not the last. And this is do you see the red pointer?
Yeah.
All right, very good. Then I probably, okay, I will see. This I will use when it comes to questions. All right, so this is a, I will use it to report, part of this talk is based on joint work with Fedor Smirnov, but I hope to get to some other results in progress. And this is a title. It involves the space of field theories and UV completeness and so forth. So let me get to the business and comment a little bit on the UV completeness, all right? So what UV completeness is, everyone knows. It generally means, well, I mean, it's not a precise definition, but it generally means that the quantum field theory is physically sensible at all distance scales, including very short, I mean, arbitrarily short distance scales. Here, of course, I assume that I'm interested in mathematical consistency of the theory, so I ignore quantum gravity, which in any event we need to invoke a notion of distance, and so if UV completeness involves, I mean, reasonable physical behavior at all arbitrary short physical arbitrary short distances. All right, let me say a few words directly out of textbook about the nature of this phenomenon and the example of the quantum electrodynamic, where this is manifested in the so-called Moscow zero or Landau pole. And these are painfully familiar formulas. The fine structure constant is given, then it says that the bare coupling constant is related by this celebrated formula, which depends on the ultraviolet cutoff momentum dum dum. And if one increases, if one changes this cutoff energy, then the bare coupling constant must be also increased in order to keep observable value of fine structure constant. And as this equivalent form of this formula makes explicit, you cannot keep increasing the lambda to infinity. At certain point, you have to stop, and it doesn't make sense beyond certain energy scale, which I denote lambda star. It happens to be like this number. Well, with numbers like this, units really don't matter. At this point, the bare coupling constant diverges, and the inverse number to it turns to zero and becomes the negative if you try to go beyond that. And it basically says that because this 1 over alpha naught is the coefficient in the bare action, it basically says that that theory is not well defined at short scales. And so in order to have something meaningful, one is advised to keep the cutoff parameter, lambda cutoff energy, below this Landau energy, lambda star. Well, I mean, of course, everyone remembers that this conclusion is based on a number of assumptions, of which is the most important is that we ignore all higher order corrections to the beta function, which are bound to become important when the coupling constant becomes large and the phenomenon is related to large coupling constant. So, I mean, in principle, this is approximation and not particularly well justified. But nonetheless, it is believed that qualitatively this picture remains valid nonetheless. One of the reasons is that it agrees very well with Wilson's idea of a normalization group. And I don't want to, I mean, I have no intention to lecture on Wilson's renormalization group here. Just let me say a few words which are relevant to the problem which I'm discussing here. And this is, okay, but generally speaking, the setup of Wilson's renormalization group is a space of field theories, which I denote sigma, and will be doing that throughout this talk. And that could be regarded as a set of actions which depend on some number of fundamental fields, bosonic, fermionic, doesn't matter, anything. It's from the very beginning, it's assumed that they can involve arbitrary higher order derivatives of the fields. But it's assumed that there is an ultraviolet cutoff, and as I say, there might be question about unitarity, but it goes sort of perpendicular to the subject of my talk, so I will ignore it. It's additional question. It's a separate question. Mm. The only requirement is that it's quasi-local, meaning that the derivative expansion of this action, basically this functional, makes sense on the field configuration in which wave vectors, free components of the fundamental field, are below the cutoff. So that's standard notion. And renormalization group transformation, of course, is the scale transformation, how scale transformation is realized in quantum field theory, meaning that if we simply naively rescale the coordinates this way, then it would also change the cutoff. And if we want to return the setup to original one, we need to integrate out the degrees of freedom in between the old cutoff, original cutoff, and this transformed cutoff. Or much rather say between this the original, the cutoff lambda, and L times lambda, the momentum shell. And that leads to some transformation in the space of actions, some transformation, which is conventional to write in an infinitesimal form. Here L is the logarithm of the scale. And so we have some sort of flow. This generates some sort of flow, renormalization group flow in the space of field theories. And if one introduces some coordinates in this space, I will denote typically them alpha, then it becomes a system of differential equations for these coordinates. So these differential equations, if you integrate them, that would give you renormalization group trajectories, the curves. And these curves, the renormalization group trajectory, is exactly what gives you idea of the scale dependence of the physics of this field theory. And of course, a normal way to apply it, you start with some action and then integrate it forward in L in order to get large scale behavior, which is typically of physical interest. In doing so, it might be difficult technically, but at least you are sort of expect to have consistent solution no matter how far you integrate forward in this renormalization group time L, And this is because, I mean, if original action is well defined, I mean, the functional integral, the path integral is well defined for the original action, a knot integrating out part of the variables probably, I mean, is unlikely to create something pathological for the remaining integration. All right, so, but if you look at this, if we look at this as a simply mathematical system of differential equations, one can try to integrate them backward in L. Here I want to make some remark, which is basically the statement that this idea of integration backward is usually based on intuition taken from the systems of differential equations with finitely many variables, system of finitely many differential equations. While in strict implementation of renormalization group, this space is of course infinite dimensional, and there is an interesting question to which extent these common properties of systems of differential equations are going to persist in this situation. In particular, the question of uniqueness of solution is to be questioned, and in which cases it holds, in which cases it can be violated. But I will discuss as if the properties of finite systems are relevant for this situation. After all, in any implementation, in any practical implementation of renormalization group transformation, some truncation is made, and we are dealing with finitely many. Anyway, with this remark, one can say that it's possible to integrate backward for some amount of time, but generally one expects that you cannot integrate indefinitely far in the past, backward in renormalization group time. There is a very simple reason for that, that if you take some arbitrary, suppose you have, you can integrate it and get some action a minus L, then if a minus L is meaningful, then it means that the original action, which has range of interaction determined by the cutoff, then it is essentially equivalent to the a minus L, which has effective range of interaction much smaller, or energy associated energy is much larger than that, which is generally unlikely. So one expects that for generic A naught, if you start integrating backward, you eventually leave the theory space, the space of field theories. So what does it mean it leaves, right? That assumes that there is a the space of field theories has some sort of boundary which separates well-defined field theories from some less well-defined, ill-defined actions. So the space of field theories includes theories that theories for which action is quasi-local in the sense which I explained, and also path integral behaves well in that it can be made convergent. And outside sigma, one expects one or both of these properties to be violated. All right, so given initial action A naught, one generally expects that for some for some special value for some value of L, which I denote minus L star, the theory A minus L leaves the space of theories, and we say that such theory is ultraviolet incomplete because it cannot be extended to arbitrary small distances. Well, there is of course some subspace, small subspace, which according to, well, I mean, which can be constructed in different ways, but it's small subset subspace in sigma for which the integration back, indefinite integration backward is possible, and that is exactly the space of ultraviolet UV complete quantum field theories. All right. Yeah, here I want to stress that given an initial point, a not initial theory, the associated L star, the scale at which the theory, if you try to integrate it backward, if it leaves the theory space, this scale is completely determined by A naught itself, and is independent on the auxiliary cutoff which you implement to make to construct actually the functional integral. So in some sense, given a theory, even if it is equipped with cutoff, you could change cutoff by performing renormalization group transformation, but it has some sort of built-in cutoff, which is related to the property of renormalization group flow. All right, so
the naive question. So
what's that?
Can I ask just a question? So if you start with an action and add to it some very irrelevant operator, would it change this lambda star a lot?
Yes. I mean, you could take a UV complete theory, add some irrelevant operator in overwhelming majority of choices, you are going to generate some L star.
If I have a finite L star and I add a very irrelevant operator, it will also typically change that L star by a lot.
Yes. Okay. Yes, but I mean, given a theory, it determines L star. That's what I want to say. It's not the something additional parameter which you put in. It's built in once you implement.
Yeah, experimentally. It's hard to measure those irrelevant terms, right? So if I add a little bit of irrelevant term, and if I change a lot of star, it's
fair enough.
It's
fair enough. Yes. All right. Okay. So in the example which I started with, this lambda star is the Landau energy scale, main goal of this talk is to bring up some other example, in some ways more simple example, two-dimensional example, in which actually a class of examples, in which this kind of phenomenon could be kind of realized without approximation. In terms of some sort of exact solution, the theory which I will concentrate mostly is what I refer to as the TT bar flow. Let me just get to the point and make some small preparations. As I said, I will be dealing with the flat space. I will use Euclidean language. I will use this kind of, you know, italic Z to denote points of this flat Euclidean space. But Z and Z bar, this kind of, you know, solid line, Z and Z bar are just complex coordinates in this two-dimensional space. So I will write typically OZ for the function of this two complex or equivalently like cone coordinates. Anyway, I will assume that the theory, as usual, I assume that the theory has energy, local energy momentum tensor with standard properties, that it's symmetric and satisfies the continuity equation. And I will typically use the CFT notations for the components ZZ and Z bar, and also for the trace component, this T, T bar, and theta. And the continuity equation then becomes this couple of simple relation of that dz bar of something is equal to dz of something else. All right, so the one of the ingredients is the number of relations which properties of the operator product expansion, which expansions which involve components of this field. And one which I will need the most is that if you take this operator product T and T bar and subtract a similar product of the trace components of the energy momentum tensor, then in this difference, almost all interesting operators disappear, cancel out. And if you ignore total derivatives, and derivatives here mean any combination of the fields which are derivatives of other field, then this combination has only one coefficient, only one term, certain operator, with the coefficient which is exactly one, which is, doesn't depend on the coordinates, and equal to one. All right? This follows from this identity, which is easily verified using the continuity equation, that any derivative of this product is a combination of the sum of z, sum of derivatives over z and z prime and similar z bar. And so if you plug in here the operator product expansions here, this operator, I mean, ignore the coefficient function which depends on z minus z prime, and thus this combination is a combination of total derivatives. All right, and from this, the only way to satisfy this is to assume that this combination itself, the coefficient is here, it is independent on z. All right. So this combination, in fact, uniquely defines because this is the coefficient is just one. The limit of z to z prime can be straightforwardly taken, and that defines the field x of z. Actually, the formula itself, already defines this field, and I will sometimes use the notation tt bar for this field, so I will use these two notations interchangeably. Okay, so it defines certain field up to derivatives because I ignored derivative terms. And the field, local field up to derivative is exactly, can be interpreted as a tangent vector in the theory space to the theory space at a given quantum field theory point. All right? So X is a tangent vector. And from what I said, there is a number of interesting consequences. For instance, one can consider finite size geometry, a geometry of a cylinder with one coordinate compactified to a circle, like this. And this is a picture. And then consider a Hamiltonian formalism in which this x is y is taken as Euclidean time. And I can consider, because the spatial coordinate now is compact and finite, then one expects then the spectrum is of Hamiltonian is discrete. I actually assume that the quantum field theory is compact, but that's only for simplicity. In fact, conclusions will not change if I go to more general case. And then property of operator product expansion, or a much rather definition of this field TT bar, certain nice factorization property of its expectation value follows that its expectation value is, basically splits into factors of its elementary constituents. And so this expectation value can be, in fact, expressed in terms of energy and momentum, finite size energy, finite size momentum, all associated with a given state. So if one uses this well-known relations, that the components of energy momentum tensor are related to energy and its derivative and momentum, is here, one finds that this expectation value admits some closed expression in terms of energy and momentum. And that actually suggests very nice properties of certain deformation of field theory, which I refer to as a TT bar flow. So one considers a curve in the space of field theories. So let me show a picture. So this is a space of theories. One considers that curve such that its tangent to its to this curve at each point is this field TT bar associated with this given field theory. In other words, the derivative of the action is TT bar field or X field associated with this given field theory. And I am going to start to speed up a little bit. And it's no biggie to derive, to find that that finite size energies as functions of size and this parameter alpha along the curve satisfy this Burgers-like equation, differential equation with the driving force, which appears when the non-zero momentum is present. This equation is the same for any energy level. So, in other words, in some sense, the theory of this TT bar flow is solvable in the sense that if you know the energy levels at the original theory, E naught of R. Then, integrating this equation, one can recover the spectrum, finite size spectrum, at any point of this curve. So, from this equation, one can start deriving many interesting consequences. I'm actually going to skip most of it, and actually all of it. I only want to say that it's not difficult to say something about scattering matrix, right? What immediately follows is the dependence of the two-to-two elastic scattering phase on this parameter alpha. And I give some calculation here, but I will skip it. The idea is very simple. If you can consider a state which is sufficiently large sizes, is interpreted as a two-particle state with some momenta, let's say opposite momenta, and then if you keep r sufficiently large and energy below any multi-particle threshold, this is completely, the energy spectrum at sufficiently large r. Determined by the scattering phase, by periodicity condition of the wave function and scattering phase. And the fact that that the energies, resulting from the quantization condition satisfy this Burger's equation, right, imposes a condition on the scattering phase, and the result is that scattering phase just shifted by some additional amount proportional to alpha and equal to hyperbolic sine of the rapidity difference. This is a rapidity difference of this particles. So in other words, one can say that two particle scattering amplitude is modified along the flow, is the original two particle scattering multiplied by this factor. It's one can notice that it has abnormally fast, the scattering phase grows abnormally fast at high energies, because hyperbolic sine is essentially energy square in the center of mass. So this is a very fast oscillating amplitude at high energies. Well, I mean, this analysis which I just sketched is valid for 2 to 2 elastic scattering amplitude, no matter if theory is integrable or non-integrable. But it doesn't extend to multi-particle scattering because of possible inelastic processes. But if you limit attention to integrable theories, then it basically says that it says how the S matrix deforms under this flow. All right. So in connection with this. With this scattering matrix, with this exponential of hyperbolic sine, some Cretin distribution deviation is in order. So this S matrix of this form, actually its massless limit, was proposed a while ago by two groups independently. Unfortunately, they go to. They are in the same transparency. I don't know why it works like this.
Maybe you should click down on the computer a few times. If you click down, it will move by a smooth amount, and then perhaps when you click left, it will.
Yeah. Did it improve?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So by these groups of independently by these groups of researchers. They introduced this S matrix as a scattering matrix of the Goldstone excitations in QCD stream. So what I said is a derivation of this S matrix from the TT bar properties of TT bar flow, Burger's equation, and all. But in fact, one can, assuming integrability, one can move in opposite direction, assume this S matrix, and then derives Burger's equation from the associated integral equation, essentially thermodynamic Bertrand-Zaks equation. And this was done in this work. So now I come I start to approach the main subject. And discuss short distance behavior. All right. First of all, let me say some words. So if you take this Burger's equation, when momentum is equal to zero, it admits very simple and easily visualized solution of this form, or much more instructively. You could, so if I, instead of using it as a function of R and alpha, treat alpha as a parameter and use a corresponding notations, then E at alpha is related by this functional equation, or much more transparently in the terms of inverse functions, right? R alpha of E inverse to this, and R naught of E inverse to this. It's just a shift of the function by a linear term. All right, so in other words, if I have a plot of the, finite size energy E naught of R at alpha equals zero, and it typically looks like this for UV complete theory, that at large R, it becomes a bulk behavior, linear in R, so it's proportional to the volume, and then at short distances it goes down control as it is controlled by a conformal field theory. Then what you do when you perform this affine transformation over here, this is just affine transformation of coordinates on this plot, you just take and bend and start to not bend but tilt the vertical axis instead, and depending on the sign of alpha you arrive for positive alpha in this picture and for negative alpha in this picture. This one is really very puzzling, it actually deserves some discussion, positive alpha, but probably in more general context, because I'm going to argue in the closer to the end of the talk that positive alpha in this TT bar flow, the case of positive alpha, doesn't exist, that the theory has no ground state at any positive alpha and any size r. While for negative alpha, it does, unless r is sufficiently small, because in this case, if you tilt the axis like this, you get basically a two-valued function, right, which exists up to some size r, and then develops a square root singularity at this point. So, as I said, I may be able to say a few words about this situation, because it's, to my mind, it's the most puzzling and mysterious situation to have ground state energy behaving like this at short distances, short sizes of finite size. This one is rather showing that there is some ultraviolet trouble starting with some distance determined by the position of the singularity.
And the S matrix explodes in the first case as well, right? As you go in the upper imaginary direction, physical shit.
Yes. In this case, if you are talking about the physical shit, where the I'm going to comment a little bit later, or if I forget, please remind me. All right. Anyway, so there is some kind of limiting size below which, if you, you can continue, of course, analytically this energy, but the continuation will return complex values, which signifies some sort of phenomenon. All right, so here I just demonstrated on the case of a conformal field theory, nothing special. So what I'm talking about is probably some instability develops at sufficiently small sizes, and that basically signifies that no matter what A naught is, the A alpha with negative alpha is not a UV complete in usual sense. There are some signs that there might be potential problems with locality in such in theory defined in such a way. For instance, again, if the theory is integrable, and then it's possible to show, and I will do it in a few minutes, then the whole curve consists of integrable theories. One can look at the form factors in this case, and And I skip the details. Given S matrix, one can compute the form factor. Form factors are such what matrix elements, or more general elements of this sort. And the result is, minimal result is essentially the old form factor of undeformed theory times this factor, which at negative alpha, which behaves, which decays like mad along the real axis. But if you start to go into complex domain, starting from some imaginary part of theta, it regime changes, it starts to oscillate at this line, and then starts to grow factorially with the rapidity. And that is a problem, no matter what, that is a problem even for negative alpha, because if you look at the intermediate state decomposition of the operators in operators in different order, in order to compare to transform one to another, you need to shift. That's how technically it's done. You need to shift the rapidity variable from real axis to the axis I pi, and this growth at large would prevent you to do that, and that is not, basically it's not clear if local commutativity can be arranged in any way. I will say a little more words towards the end of this talk. Well, a few words about some generalization of that. I started with this construction of this operator TT bar in terms of energy momentum tensor. And in fact, if you notice, the only ingredient was the continuity equation, that this was conserved current, a satisfying continuity equation. So if we start, we consider instead integrable quantum field theories, which contemporary paradigm includes existence of infinitely many conserved currents and infinitely many associated conserved charges. So the currents I again denote T and theta, their components, they satisfy the conservation implies that they satisfy this continuity equation, which look exactly like that for the energy momentum. And I could straightforwardly repeat the same exercise and show that this combination formed out of these components generates defines a single field up to derivatives again. And then it's a little bit of technical exercise, but then one can show that if I perturb the theory by adding these operators, the conservation of this associated charges PS, PS bar is going to be preserved. So this infinitesimal deformations with these operators preserve integrability, or in other words, the operator X sub S interpreted as a vectors tangent vectors to the theory space, in fact, are tangent to the subspace of integrable theories. Okay. In other words, in integrable case, the notion of TT bar flow can be extended to infinitely many deformations parameterized by this alpha. In fact, it's possible to see how these deformations affect, in integrable field theory, you have factorizable S matrix, which is completely determined by two particle S matrix and so forth, which satisfy all this number of conditions. And they are determined, they define these conditions, leave ambiguity of the S matrix in the form of CDD ambiguity, some scalar factor phi here, which satisfies certain analytic relation. And sort of formal solution of this relation is can be written as a exponential of some linear combination of some series, Fourier series is in hyperbolic sines of theta, where S runs the same set as this, the one which labels local integrals of motion of the theory. Well, I mean, this representation assumes that theta is sufficiently small, so that the series is convergent, and then one uses analytic continuation and so forth. But that's in other words, what I'm saying is that adding these deformations with the operator x sub s actually adds additional factor like this to the two particle S matrix, and the TT bar flow is a specific case where this series contains just one first term. But the bottom line is that infinitesimal that these deformations of integrable field theory is in one-to-one correspondence with deformation of the S matrix. Well, I mean, sometimes one, it's more convenient to use this product form, especially if one wants to keep the normal high energy behavior of them. Normal of the scattering amplitude.
So if you put one alpha, like alpha 3, and 0, and all alphas to 0, it will always blow up in a physical shift that is maybe, right?
Yes. But in some sense, you blow up in the physical shit. No matter if you take your TT bar flow and take negative alpha. I mean, what matters if you check locality is the behavior of matrix elements, and I just explained that it's pathological in any case. So there is a potential problem of locality in all these cases. And I mean, as a sign that it's probably not only potential but real problem, is that if you look at the generic deformation with this with the CDD factors, then the theory is unlikely to be UV complete. This can be seen if one tries to look at the finite size energy again using thermodynamic beta ansatz approach. Those to your question, I want to add that the problem with UV doesn't seem to be related to the high energy behavior of the. So let me say it separately. A thermodynamic beta ansatz equation is some sort of device which transforms, which you put in S matrix, and it produces finite size ground state energy as a result. So one can try to manipulate with this CDD factors and see how the ground state energy behaves. To the best of my knowledge, this was never done systematically. But some long ago, we tried to do that with my brother. And we studied several simple CDD deformations of the known S matrices. Some of this led to this, that was Alyosha's discovery. With the simplest choice, he discovered staircase model. But then, I mean, with enthusiasm after that, he started to plug in more CDD factors. And the result was sort of disappointing at that point. We basically worked with the CDD factors of this kind, which have decent high energy behavior. And if you integrate the TBA equation, the result was this, that if you If you at sufficiently large sizes, you have decent behavior physically, expected behavior, but then at some size r, the ground state energy develops singularity, and it is indeed a square root singularity, exactly as in the TT bar flow. So this calls for some explanation of this singularity, what kind of instability it entails, and so forth. And also because the results which are obtained here, which I quote here, are independent on the high energy behavior of the scattering phase, it looks like it has nothing to do with the high energy, or at least not this directly related to high energy behavior of the scattering phase. So in order to see what's going on, I think it was natural to perform some sort of model to solve, to try to solve just for explicit dynamics, because neither Burger's equation nor a thermodynamic Bethe-Ansatz equation, they are mathematically fine, but they are not giving a much insight into the physics of this instability. That's why it was useful to look at the sort of explicit solution of the problem using some approximation, some limiting case, and that was natural to start with, is a TT bar flow generated by starting from some conformal field theory and consider CFT with large central charge so that T and T bar, the fields from this perturbation is built, are classical fields. All right? So I will assume, in this discussion, I will assume that the ground state is determined by some classical configuration of this classical field. And moreover, I will assume that for the geometry of a cylinder, and if you are interested in the ground state, this configuration is a constant. Because, I mean, it's natural to expect that the classical solution respects the symmetries of the problem. All right? So I will, from that point, I will drop the subscript classical and show you how the whole problem in this case dramatically simplifies. So if I take these components of the conserved currents, they typically have the form of some differential polynomials built from the components of energy momentum tensor of the same dimension. And there is a leading coefficient, t to the n, and some subleading coefficient involving derivatives. So if the t we are interested in is a constant, one could neglect this derivative terms. And so there is very simple control over the structure of this perturbation. In other words, the action which we are looking at is a conformal field theory action perturbed by some powers of TT, of the combination TT bar with some coefficient. In other words, it's some function potential term which depends on on the product TT bar. Here I assume that the dimensionless ratios here are just Taylor coefficients of this function. All right, so technically speaking, it has advantages to introduce auxiliary fields so that further rewrite this action as some action mu, which is essentially the generating action associated with generating function for the components of energy momentum tensor in conformal field theory, plus some potential term W, which is a double Legendre transform of this potential term U. And this A sub mu, all right, is effective action generated. It's essentially the generating functional for the correlation function. So this is expectation value of this combination. all right, over the conformal field theory. And it's easy to evaluate it. It has this simple form. And so what we need to look at is the effective action of this form, which involves conformal field theory contribution and this W term, potential term contribution. And I introduced some parameter, which is inverse in R squared and proportional to alpha. Alpha, the parameter of the flow. So this is now in the leading semi-classical approximation, we are to just to minimize this action and see what happens, right? And it's interesting exercise, and it's actually interesting, easy but interesting problem is to see what happens depending on this form of this W. But I'm not going to report that because it's still underway. But it's not very difficult to identify specific W, which is associated with TT bar flow. It has this simple form. And it's not very difficult to check that if you minimize it with this form of W, compute your energy, it returns this value, which is exactly the result of the integration of the Burgers equation started with the conformal field theory initial condition. Well, actually, that's why how this form was obtained in the first place. So in this case, we can study the mechanism of the formation of the singularity. See, there are two terms, this and this. This term is definitely not bounded from below because it depends separately on mu and mu bar. And you could approach the point minus one in this plane here from any direction and make this term arbitrarily negative. But there is this term, which sort of has a singular as a function of radius, and that this is mu plane. This h has to be read as mu. And because of this pole here, this split the space, the mu plane, into inner part of the circle and outer part of the circle. And they are separated by some infinite barrier. So configuration space splits into two parts which don't talk to each other. And if for not this term, we would also live inside this circle, inside this disk. But then there is this term which creates some sort of contribution which attracts the field configuration to this point. Minus one. And depending on the coefficient, t, how large t is, either this or that term wins in the vicinity of minus one and exactly at this point, t equals to minus one, this term starts to win and this hole in the barrier now allows to field configuration to get through this point and escape and perhaps leads to the decay of the vacuum. Unfortunately, the precise mechanism of this decay cannot be studied in the leading semi-classical approximation. One needs to look at the fluctuations. It's most likely that the decay is actually fluctuational. And so one needs to go beyond the leading approximation, semi-classical approximation. This is not done yet. Here I wanted to say a few words about the way, I mean, the question is, the formation of singularity basically says that you cannot squeeze the size of the system below some length, but strictly speaking, it doesn't violate locality. Doesn't show explicitly violation of locality. In order to see that, one needs to go and look at the correlation function, and there is a natural mechanism for the correlation functions to show if the locality is violated or not. And that is, again, another open problem. And so here I want to stop and stop.
Questions? Okay, let's take a speaker again.